There we go, recording has started. Then we'll give it a couple more minutes to see if anybody else shows up. Maybe more people show up, Kayla. Hope. But this is the order that I have here. So if you look here, it would be Sonia first, then Sadie, then Jose. And then it would be Kate, Jameson, and Michael. Hopefully they show up. But we'll give it a couple more minutes to see if anybody else shows up. Oh, Jameson's here. Okay.
Yep, I am here.
All right, so then we just need Kate and Michael. But we can start, if you want, Sandra, you can start now. We'll get it started and see if anybody, if Kate and Michael show up.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and see if I can get it to share. You might hear my varmint that's beside me. You might. Hopefully not. So let's go over here. Are you able to see my screen?
Yes, I can see your screen.
Okay, come on. I'm beginning. Come on. Come on. There we go. Yay. All right. So I ended up doing mine on the pros and cons of having a smart or connected home. Not a phone, but a home. All right. So, what is a smartphone? I might end up accidentally saying phone instead of home. So I'm so used to saying phones. So, what is a smart or a connected home? A smart home refers to a convenient home setup where appliances and devices can be automatically controlled remotely from anywhere with an internet connection by using a mobile or other networked device. Devices in a smart home are interconnected through the internet, allowing the user to control functions such as security access to the home, temperature, also known as, you know, your thermostat, lighting, and even a home theater. And you can do that remotely. So, the history of smart homes. Very interesting. Smart homes started as ideas, not physical structures. We have seen in the realm of science fiction, home automation. Famous writers have also imagined a future where homes are completely interactive and at the same time run themselves. We've also seen shows, especially from the 1960s, such as The Jetsons, with a fully automated home, along with robots and all that other good stuff. So, timeline. This is interesting. From 1901 to 1920, we had the creation of home appliances. The first true achievement began with the first engine-powered vacuum cleaner in 1901. 6 years later, a much more practical version was invented. Within a few decades, refrigerators, along with toasters, irons, washing machines, and dryers were created. So, fast forward to between 1966 and 1967. Even though it was never commercially sold, the Echo 4 was the first smart device. This device could turn appliances on and off, control the thermostat, and compute shopping lists. The kitchen computer was developed the next year. The reason why this never ended up working was that the advertisement did not help with selling the product. So advertising is the key if you want to make sure you can get things passed. Okay, next one, 1991. That is the creation of gerontology. This is where gerontology meets technology. This new technology was created to help seniors. If one remembers the commercial, you know, I've fallen and I can't get up, which is from Life Alert, that is a good example of that. All right. And then between 1998 and the early 2000s is when smart homes really started to be developed. Some of the first things were things such as Amazon's Alexa. And then we have the Apple smartphones that use Siri and the Android devices that have Google Assistant. There are also things like smart TVs and, of course, IoTs. So what are the pros and cons? What are the pros of having a smart home? There's convenience, easy access, security. Think of doorbell cameras such as Ring. Of course, everything is connected. And then the IoT, Internet of Things, which those are all easy to set up. You can even have these in apartments. So I mentioned both smart and connected earlier. So what's the difference between a smart and a connected home? Well, as of right now, there is no difference. So smart and or connected homes can help with security, as mentioned earlier. With cameras, one can see what is happening within the residence and report to the police if there is a burglary. At the same time, security does need to be taken into consideration. Because back in 2021, a group in the UK wanted to see what would happen if they set up a smart home and how susceptible it was to being hacked. They used real devices that connected to the internet. These range from TVs to thermostats to a security system. Most of the devices were able to fend off the attacks, but a camera that was purchased from Amazon, that security was not as strong as it could be, and that actually was hacked. The hacker was able to take control of the camera inside the residence and spy on what was happening. It was May of 2021 when the house went live. This test began slowly with about 1,000 hacking attempts in the first week. By June, it had increased to at least 12,000 unique scan attempts against all devices. This equates to around 14 attempts by hackers to brute force their way into the devices every hour. Yes, every hour. So how can you protect a smart and or connected home? Well, think about what is needed. Just because it's new and shiny doesn't mean it's needed. Then, of course, secure your Wi-Fi. Change those default passwords. And then update firmware. Always make sure that the latest patch is installed. Remember Patch Tuesday. Replace outdated routers and modems. Sometimes it's the router and or modem and not the antivirus program that is the problem. And then manage passwords. If needed, get a password well to save all those complex passwords. And of course, you know, enable multi-factor authentication. Having a strong password is one thing, but MFA can add another layer of security. Split up the network. Don't have everything on one network, for all can be sabotaged with one hack. If needed, also have a guest network set up for friends and relatives. If one remembers, this is actually a good example of this with the network, the updated Battlestar Galactica television show from the early 2000s, they set up the military on one network saying it was the best thing ever that was created. And of course, the Cylons had a back door and they were able to shut that entire military down. And the rest of the show was the fallout of that event. So, and then of course, monitor the network. After setting up the networks, you also need to monitor it on a regular basis to make sure that it is not hacked. So, the takeaway, having a smart and or connected home is good. Just keep in mind that it can and will be hacked at some point. Make sure that all antivirus and any malware programs are updated on a regular basis and default passwords are changed to one that is complex. So enjoy your smart and connected home. Just make sure it is you have everything protected. And that's it.
Thank you so much. That was really good. Does anybody have any questions for Sonia? Sandra, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It was a great job. It was very informative. I like that.
There was more information that I found, but I just didn't have time to put it in. So yeah, and you have you also have to make sure that because some technology companies are taking control more and more and more, if they don't like what you say, they could control things and shut things down.
That's kind of scary.
So you have to be it's scary. So you have to be extremely cautious and like I said, you have to be extremely cautious and wary. Yeah. And I know people, they say, okay, you know, when I get my stuff, I get the dumbest thing out there.
Yeah, most people go for like the cheapest one, so that way they don't think nothing will happen, but you never know what can happen to any device you have.
Right. So, all right.
Very good job. Thank you so much, Sandra.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next person up is Sadie. Hi, Sadie. Come on up.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now.
Okay, that's good. Sorry about that.
You're fine.
Working out a few oh my Lord. Is that happening because I already have it open, or do I need to close it for it to okay?
No, oh, we see your screen.
Why is it so small? I want it to be bigger. That's so small.
Should be it able looks to do like normal coffee. For us.
Sorry? Because I know you guys can't see that. That's very small, right?
No, it's not small on our side. We see it fine.
I can read that just fine. I was actually sent over to make sure there were no interns that have wandered their way over here on accident.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. Let me reintroduce myself. I hardly speak. So most persons don't really know my voice. My name is Sadie Williams, and I'll be presenting an optical corrector recognition, also referred to as OCR. I'll be discussing what OCR is. I'm sure you guys can't even see that. I wanted a nice big screen for you. I'm so sorry about that, but I'll go ahead. I'll click on the first one. So the first thing I'll be discussing in what is OCR and how does it work. Let's see if I can see from here. I myself can't see there. Is there any way else I can make this bigger? Can you guys see anything though?
Yeah, we see it perfectly fine.
Okay.
Everything is good on our side. We see it big. It's not small.
Okay. Probably what I'll do, you're hearing me, right?
Yep, we hear you.
Perfectly, right?
Yep.
Okay, what I'll do, I'm just looking from my end. Okay, on a table of contents, I'll be discussing three things, and I have two videos that I think you'll find quite interesting. First, I'll be talking about what is OCR and how does it work. Second, techniques involved in OCR. Third, why businesses use it. And tools, an example of the OCR tools, and two videos at the end. What is OCR and how does it work? Optical character recognition, or OCR, is a technology consisting of hardware and software used for processing and detecting handwritten text in digital images or paper files. This technique is done by scanning a document and then converting the information into machine-readable format. What are the techniques involved in OCR? The techniques involved in OCR are image pre-processing, AI character recognition, and post-processing. Image pre-processing is the first stage in which a document is converted into a picture, transformed into black and white to evaluate black versus dark characters and then segmented into individual pieces using the OCR system. In the next stage, artificial intelligence, AI, character recognition, the AI targets one letter, phrase, or paragraph at a time by analyzing the dark portions to recognize characters and numerals using pattern recognition and feature recognition approaches. In the pattern recognition approach, the AI system has information that is already stored, such as language, text format, and handwriting. It then compares this information to detect letters on pictures to find matches. So this is the information that is stored in the database. In the feature recognition approach, the algorithm is used to recognize characters like the amount angled, crossing, or curved lines in a letter. Just think of the letter T. In the post-processing stage, the AI used to correct flaws or errors in the final file. So why businesses will use it? The most popular reasons businesses use OCR technology are to search text and for operational efficiency to help with document and digital workflows. The following are examples of operational efficiency. 1. Scanning, verifying, reviewing, editing, and analyzing hand-filled forms. So if you go to a company and you're asking you to fill out information, you're filling out a form, they actually use a technology to scan all of that, and they'll be verifying, reviewing, and doing all of that at once. So they don't, it reduces manual labor and make it more efficient and it's faster. 2, using term to search for documents in the database rather than sifting through files. What I mean by that, when you go on a database, you want a file, so you put a particular word in and you will get the file. So rather than manually going through the files to find what you want. And 3, converting handwritten notes to editable text and documents. Some examples of the OCR tools. 1, there's a PDF scanner. This is used for adding a signature to papers by importing photos and PDFs. I'm sure you're aware of the PDF document. You'll see something asking it to affix your signature. PDF scanner will do that. And 2, you have online OCR. This is used for converting pictures to text and supports 46 languages, including Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, Japanese, and Chinese. 3, there's an office lens. This is developed by Microsoft. It is used for converting written notes on whiteboards to digital format. And these are the examples. Here are the examples of the, let me go over. Why am I so slow with this? Yeah, sorry. That's an example of the 3 tools. Now, you remember I said that the OCR consists of both hardware and software. So the hardware in this case is the PDF scanner. And on the screen, probably it's still a little too small, which I apologize once more. That brand is Epson. And one of the description, it says simplified file management, create searchable PDFs with included optical character recognition, convert scanned documents to editable Word and Excel files. And another one is online OCR Google Lens. I don't know about anyone else, when on my phone, because I have an Android, you know, they always populate all these things on it. And I'm saying, what is Google Lens? And I had no clue what it is, and now I do. So Google Lens become a mobile scanning and OCR app when you use it with other apps like Google Photos. And then 3rd, another tool is the Office Lens. This one is by Microsoft. Microsoft Lens, formerly Microsoft Office Lens, it trims, enhances, and makes pictures of whiteboards and documents readable. In order for things to make more sense, you have presented a little video clip on it. This tiny thing.
It's optical character recognition, OCR is a technology that recognizes characters, such as letters, numbers, and symbols within digital images like photo and documents, scene photos, and any other images with text. Steps involved in optical character recognition are pre-processing, tesseract module, and post-processing, and pre-processing. OCR software often pre-processes images to improve the chances of successful recognition. Tesseract module. Tesseract is an optical character recognition engine which finds pixels, letters, words, and sentences. Post-processing. Post-processing step reduces the number of errors, corrects sentence and states using dictionary. Follow demo, neighbors,
sorry. And then I have another video. So I'm not going to take it for granted that everyone remembers exactly how algorithm works. So this video is just 2 minutes and 29 seconds long. Please enjoy.
You may have heard the term algorithm recently, whether it was online or maybe in some conversation about technology. It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, but what exactly does it mean? Well, simply put, an algorithm is a set of steps used to complete a specific task. They're the building blocks for programming, and they allow things like computers, smartphones, and websites to function and make decisions. But in addition to being used by technology, a lot of things we do on a daily basis are also similar to algorithms. Let's say you want to make some spaghetti. In order to do this successfully, there's a certain set of steps you need to follow in a particular order. First, you need to boil a pot of water. Once it's boiling, you then add the spaghetti and cook it for a set amount of time, stirring occasionally. Once it's finished, you drain the water and then it's ready to be served with a sauce of your choice. That entire process is actually an algorithm. Because you followed those steps in that order, you reached your desired outcome, a delicious pasta dish. But if you were to make a mistake, say, over or undercooking your noodles, it probably wouldn't be as good. Programs work in a similar way. Their code is made up of algorithms telling them what to do. Let's say that we want to use a navigation app to get directions. When we punch in a destination, the app uses an algorithm to look at the various available routes. Next, it uses a different algorithm to check the current traffic. And then a third one takes that information and calculates the best available route. All of these algorithms are built right into the app's code. If there were any kind of error in that code, the app wouldn't be able to follow these algorithms correctly, meaning you wouldn't receive your directions. Both of these examples show how both humans and computers use algorithms to perform everyday tasks. The difference is that computers can use algorithms and calculate things better, faster, and more efficiently than we can. Technology is only going to continue to evolve and get even better at what it does. As long as coding and programming continue to be used, algorithms will be at the heart of these technologies, guiding what they do and how they do it.
And that is it for my presentation. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, it was very good. Thank you, Sadie. Does anybody have any questions for Sadie?
Oh, I forgot one thing. I don't know if the OCR video, it was just showing you how when you have your IDs or your passports and you're traveling, that is the technology that they are using. So they are scanning it just to find a match in the database to ensure that you are you. Thank you.
Did a great job. It was really good.
Thanks.
You didn't have nothing to worry about. You did good.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, if nobody has any questions, we'll move on to Jose Moreno.
Okay, just setting it up right now.
No problem.
Okay, you guys can hear me, see slides and everything?
Yep, everything sounds good, and we can see you and hear it.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being in attendance today. I'm Jose Moreno, a networking intern with PGIP. To start, I wanted to see, change it up a little bit on this masterclass. I wanted to see if I could get a volunteer to answer a question or two. It could be anybody. Just open your mic.
I'll volunteer.
All right. So Sadie, I wanted to see, the first question is, what is your favorite hobby? And then the second one would be, what month you were born in?
Sure. My favorite hobby is art. I like to draw. And okay. I was born in the month of July.
Okay. I appreciate your answers. Thank you so much for the information you provided me with. I'll try to improve this presentation based off the information you provided me with. Now you can attend the rest of the slideshow. Now, if you look at the bottom right of your slide, you'll be able to see the fine print stating the data collected in this presentation is voluntary and will be used to improve our revenue, but your name will not be used. So this leads me into my presentation, where we will cover data collection for my masterclass presentation. Thank you, Sadie, again.
You're welcome.
All right, on today's agenda for this presentation, I'll start off with briefly covering what is data collection and how we could define it. Next, we'll cover what are the benefits or the pros to data collection, followed by what are some disadvantages or cons to data collection. I also wanted to share a video with you all that gives great examples of the dangers of big data, followed by the conclusion where we'll discuss everything that we covered. And lastly, my references that I used during my research. So what is data collection? Is the collection of data all bad as it seems? Not all data collection is bad. Data collection consists of collecting, measuring, and analyzing data through various methods, which could be surveys, cookies, social media tracking, or website visits. This collection of data can help businesses or companies build a foundation on learning their users or customers, which can lead to help businesses make crucial decisions on releases of merchandise or improved services that the company may provide to the consumer. Companies' data governance programs should include policies that comply with the GDPR, which stands for General Data Protection Regulations. But we will also learn how this can be abused by influence to get the outcome of the organizations, of what the organization want, whether it's political, to sell merchandise, or to get kids to buy more Roblox. So the pros. Data collection is a powerful tool that can lead to change in any business to get a desired outcome or prediction. For example, fashion, sports, or even predicting the top trending Christmas gifts for your children by using previous years of market research to see the trend for this year. Another amazing example of how data was used for the better of people was during COVID-19, when two top tech competitors, Apple and Google, worked together to develop methods of tracing and outbreaks of coronavirus. Before the tech companies worked together, GPS was used by third-party applications to track outbreaks of COVID-19. This was not only depleting users' device of battery, but also due to accuracy and privacy concerns, Apple and Google decided to ban the third-party applications and work together to provide the users with an improved exposure alert system. Now that we heard the good, it's time to hear the why data collection is sometimes bad. Although companies are trying to get better at data collection by implementing regulations in the last few years. There are major issues that have faced major backlash for improper or misuse of customer data. Also, insecure methods of data that was collected from users and privacy concerns. A real-life example of misuse or misrepresentation of data collection that I came across in my research would have to be Facebook. A few years ago, when they required users of the social media application to provide their email passwords to log into their Facebook account, which Facebook then stored on their company servers in plain text. This allowed more than 20,000 employees to be able to access passwords for more than 200 million users' email passwords. The only way around giving Facebook your email password was by clicking a small button that says need help, but users were unaware of the function of the button. So I hope this helps you understand the disadvantage of data collection and how it could be abused. I'll now present the video covering the dangers of data that I found helpful during my research.
Hello, I'm Victor Meyer-Schönberger, professor of internet governance at the University of Oxford and co-author of the new book, Reinventing Capitalism in the Age of Big Data. The huge market platforms, the Netflixes and the Amazons of this world, they know a lot about us. And we as humans think that we are so original and so creative and so unpredictable and irrational, when in fact we are much more predictable than we think. And so those companies could conceivably use the data that they have and try to influence us, not just in our buying decisions, but in our political decisions. We've seen some of that sinister tone in the discussion about fake news on Facebook and the targeting of fake news to particular users of Facebook over the last 6 to 9 months. So the obvious danger for consumers is that they become transparent, that their privacy and their data is being abused or at least exploited by those large platforms. But I see an even larger, more sinister danger. And the sinister danger has to do with the fact that those digital recommendation engines, those smart assistants that are data-driven and are proliferating on those data-rich market platforms, these assistants are fed with data from all of us. If these assistants have a flaw in how they interpret data, then every one of the recommendations that they make will be flawed, will be biased. And so we all make the wrong decisions. The beauty of the market has always been that it's been resilient. If somebody makes a stupid choice, then the market doesn't go down the tube. But that only works if we are independent of each other. If, however, we all listen to the same stupid, smart recommendation engine, we all may make the same mistake. It's like finding out that your car has a brake that doesn't work, and everybody else's car has the same brake. And this is the kind of single point of failure that we may encounter if we continue along the path of these monopolistic structures. If we believe that the market is a really good social innovation to bring people together and to help them coordinate, then we need to keep them competitive. Every company that operates in the market and that is getting larger and larger will be able to offer their product at lower prices. That's called the scale effect. If you scale up, you can produce more cheaply. The counterforce to the scale effect of market concentration has always been innovation. That is, that a new company can come in with a great idea and then topple the incumbent because they just have the better idea to use. The problem now is that most innovation in the future is going to be data-driven. It's going to be derived from feedback data from consumers and users. So the companies that have a lot of data will also be highly innovative. That will lead to an unprecedented age of market concentration. And if we don't stop it now, we will find monopolies that combine political and market power like we've never seen before.
All right. Just to make sure y'all can hear me.
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. So what did we learn? We are not as predictable as we thought. Big data collection builds pretty much a profile to identify our tendencies to get to know you and me. This not only predicts what we want to buy, but it also it could influence us to make major decisions that impact our daily lives. An example being politics. One example the presenter used that I liked was a car with no brakes. If we are all influenced by a smart machine that says this is the best decision to make, and we all make that same decision, but the machine has a flaw, the machine had a flaw in the data that was collected, then we all made the same mistake. Like I said before, this could be a market decision, political, or even lifestyle decision. Sorry. And then this brings me to my conclusion. In this presentation, I wanted to introduce you or even further expand your knowledge on what data collection is by going over the meaning of data collection and covering some real life examples of data being used or abused. I also wanted to cover what are some advantages that companies are doing with the data they do collect and how they use the information to actively improve their services and products they supply to their consumers. Another point that we covered in this presentation is learning how with every advantage, there's a disadvantage. In this case, we saw, even though companies are trying to improve their services through data collection, there may be faults in the system that may lead to over-collection of data, such as password storing or even abuse by selling data to third parties. Lastly, we covered how the use of data can be repurposed so it can influence users to make decisions that affect their everyday lives. So now that you know a little more about data collection, do you think it's as bad as it seems? And then this is my reference slide. That I used during my research. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. I also love feedback, and since this is on data collection, I would love to hear your feedback so I can improve my services. Thank you.
You're welcome. I enjoyed Thank you, Jose.
That was a good presentation.
Yep. Sorry about the nerves in the beginning. I also had a little bit of heartburn.
It happens sometimes. That was a good topic, though, because data is everywhere, and as long as we know how to get it protected and keep it safe, that's all that matters.
Thank you.
If you are a new intern, I believe I see Yao in here. You have to be in your orientation first before you come to MasterClass. So if you are a new intern, we need you to go to orientation, not be in MasterClass. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Jose? Once again, Jose, it was a very good presentation. Thank you so much. And the next person up would be Cade Schmidt. Cade, if you're ready.
Hello, are you guys able to hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
All righty. Are you guys able to see my screen?
Yes, sir. We see it.
Cool. Okay. So my presentation topic is the digital dangers that await us in the modern world. We'll be unpacking some modern cyber threats. The purpose of this presentation will be to cover existing security threats and examples of how they're being used every day. We'll try and inform us the threat of the cyber attacks, especially when they're targeted as a weapon against a nation, how we can prevent some of these threats on a personal or employee level. And then we're going to try and paint a picture of what cyber warfare could look like and how it does, the different attack vectors, as well as the implications of some of those attacks. So without further ado, let's get into the fun. We're going to cover some of the relevant and recent cyber attacks that we've seen unfold in the last couple of years. The goal of these attacks are not all the same, but they basically cover, they fall under the same criminal element, I suppose. Some of these categories are data-focused attacks. A good example of this was the Equifax data leaks of 2017, where Chinese hackers exploited a vulnerability and leaked the personal information of 147 million Americans, nearly half our population. And the data ranged from names, addresses, to birthdays, and social security numbers. It's a pretty bad one. Just about half of all adults were a victim of this one. Now, the majority of attacks are financially focused, such as, I'm sure we've all heard a million times, ransomware attacks. In the last 3 years, we've seen a wild variation from them. The most recent one being the MGM Resorts hack, which shut down all of MGM's business fronts, ranging from casinos to their hotels and whatnot. And it's estimated to have cost them $100 million plus of damage. That alone, that's just tremendous for a company. It's probably the worst ransomware attack we've seen so far. But the targets range to another example where the Russian hacker group attacked the Colonial Pipeline in the U.S., which shut down allegedly over like $100 million. I apologize about that. Let me get this dog under control. So sorry about that, y'all. But yeah, the Russian hacker group, they targeted that pipeline. I'm sure we all remember that, especially if you're in the northeast of the U.S. Allegedly, I'm from the south. I'm in Oklahoma, so I didn't really see the full consequences. But from what I heard, there's fuel shortages. I think prices may even have spiked. I mean, if I owned the gas station, I'd have took advantage of it. That's a story for another day. Now, cyber attacks, like we were mentioning earlier, range widely, and a major, major, major category that not a lot of people discuss is intellectual property attacks. Golly, here's the real fun. So in one scenario, Chinese state actors stole the blueprints for the F-35 and F-22 fighter jet from Lockheed Martin, and they also stole the B-1B heavy bomber blueprints from Boeing. In the circumstance of the F-35, it was estimated that the hackers got terabytes of data. Terabytes. It had to be practically all of the research information. It had to be a ton of it. We all know how small data is on a computer, how much you can get out of a megabyte. But anyway, since the plans were stolen, the Chinese government had created they had modified and adapted their jets with some of the proprietary information they took. Here on the picture on the right, we got a picture of the F-22. But anyway, the Honeywell company that was also complicit in some of the files being leaked. Not all of them. I think it was something like 70. They leaked about like 70 different files pertaining to the projects, and they were only fined $13 million, which is nothing. That's pretty preposterous if you ask me. But in another circumstance that wasn't defense related, a Chinese company named Sinovel owed around $800 million to AMSC, which manufactures wind turbines for renewable energy. They had stolen the source code and had no longer needed that company in their supply chain operations, so they cut them out. But that proprietary information they had stole allegedly cost the company $1 billion of damage and the loss of 700 people's jobs. It's substantial. 700 people had to go out and find new work. Probably couldn't eat for a couple nights. But here's a quote from the assistant attorney general that was partnered with the case. Sinovel nearly destroyed an American company by stealing its intellectual property. Golly, that's just horrible. But also, here we have a picture of the Chinese counterpart jet of some of the plans they had stolen from the Raptor. They don't look exactly the same, but the majority of what they were looking for, I guess, was information about the engine of the jet, some of the stealth radar detection capabilities of it. But we'll continue on from some of the crazy ones and get to the physical-based attacks. Now, I'm sure everybody's heard of the Stuxnet attack, which is a U.S. and Israeli joint cyber offensive focused on the Iranian nuclear material enrichment program. They had made the virus and what it at the time was the largest malware ever developed and used successfully, we might add. They had gotten it on the centrifuges of in their program, and it had caused them to spin way faster than they were supposed to damage the hardware. And they had programmed it so they wouldn't be able to tell through any alerts or just monitoring it at all. So months went by, many, many centrifuges were broken before anybody caught wind and figured out what was happening. Is a pretty major deal. And when it comes to cyber warfare, it really makes you think if you could get away with that for months without a single person noticing something like that's going on, imagine how far you could get just infiltrating and not having any carrying out the attack yet, you know? You could probably really get in there, get to the top of the leadership. But in another physical attack scenario, in 2015, the Ukrainian power grid was attacked. Situation resulted in the power of 230,000 citizens being disrupted. And after they successfully downed the power, they had bombed the customer support hotlines with fake phone calls to further hinder the reporting capabilities to figure out how widespread it was. I'm sure, as we all know, that current conflict has escalated way beyond out of control, and the power grid is targeted again in 2016 and 2022. I'm sure they're probably working on it again right now. But we'll go back to another case that's closer to home for most of us, the Colonial Pipeline attack. As we mentioned earlier, it was a Russian hacking group. We can't certify that they were state affiliated, even though they probably were. I'd imagine that would be something to get against your counterpart. The impact of the situation resulted in short-term fuel shortage to the whole northeast of the U.S. You know, I'll say it again. I didn't live up there, but from what I heard, it was pretty bad. Lines at the gas stations again and whatnot. But we'll go ahead and continue. So what cyber warfare does look like, which we covered a little bit of, and we'll talk about the physical aspects of what could happen. So we all know today's world is interwoven with technology, the vast majority connected to the internet in some form or fashion. Most of the commodities that support our life would be under threat, including these high-value targets. Telecommunication infrastructure,
power grids, water sanitation stations, manufacturing facilities, farm equipment, transportation systems, healthcare, weapon systems, just about everything that keeps us fed, keeps us entertained, makes stuff for us, keeps us alive if we get hurt, the weapons that protect us, literally everything you know is being worked on by every state's working against each other to try and infiltrate these aspects. And some of them we can definitely say for a fact that there's major moves going on. And then we have the psychological aspects, which we've all come to know over the last couple of years. Misinformation. You know, this takes place through a lot of different forms or fashions, just from simple stories that you see and read, and, you know, just topics you don't really care to read into, like, oh, they're raising rent in California or whatever, raising rent out in Oklahoma to create sort of like a fear monger for people on some psychological operations. Or it could aim, you know, to be political, to divide people. You know, it seems like that's the majority of news that's even discussed today. We all got to remember, united we stand, divided we fall. Some of the crazy stuff you see news stories about, you don't ever hear somebody physically in person talking about it. But as AI has recently evolutionized to the crazy state that it is now compared to, you know, 3-4 years ago, or you'd have never guessed it would have been this advanced, this intelligent. It's only going to get worse. You know, somebody out there is using it all day long to, with the efficiency of 10, 12 people, to push out fake stories and fake information against their enemies or whoever they want to affect. Or it could just be for a financial gain, which we'll cover here in a minute. I got a very good video to cover that. We also got to talk about the deep fakes, which we'll also get to. That's my favorite topic, this whole conversation. But we'll continue. Social media used as a weapon. You know, obviously a lot of the fake misinformation, most of it obviously spread through social media. I know we all see posts about fake things or claims that couldn't be backed up about products. You know, this will make you smarter. So make you stronger. You won't crash off coffee, caffeine if you take one of these. But I believe the best example of social media as a weapon is around election time in the U.S. for the last 2 cycles. We're about to be in the third. We already see the machine ramping up. But think back to 2016, 2020, all the fake news stories and interference of this and that and whatnot. Other countries pushing in propaganda, making up stuff, trying to divide everybody, or just spread fake lies, or maybe even get some people elected over the others. Now we'll go ahead and cover the modern threats targeting average user. We all know about phishing. We should all know what it is by now. I'm sure all of us have received hundreds of emails trying to phish us to stop the Amazon payment or PayPal payment or whatnot. These targets usually are looking for some kind of financial gain. So the impact on the average user would be financial loss, loss to an account on a website, or even identity theft for some of the most obvious ones. Another threat, ransomware. We've all know what this is and the implications: data loss, financial loss, extortion. Then we got malware, where your computer would be intruded with the virus, and it could range. If you're somebody important, they probably want to extort you or use your position and the connections you have to gain something. Or they might just be trying to set up your computer to do crypto mining without you knowing it, mine Bitcoin for them. Or you could be on a botnet, they could use it to attack DDoS people. And then we got the classic scams. You know, I need $1,000 to get my $1 million or whatever, which is almost always some kind of financial loss. And we got the classic credential stuffing, where people use your leaked login information and they try and log into as many websites as possible, see if you have the same password from whatever was leaked. Now, the impact on these really does vary. I mean, most of the time, people are just trying to get your streaming account, or they might even, I've heard people hack these accounts and then use your points for food, your rewards points, and go and get some free food for your, all your points. I mean, it really ranges, but sometimes people can be doing it to get like administrator access for a web app or a business, or just even to get on your, maybe they use that to get on your tax profile and then they figure out all your stuff and steal your identity. I mean, most of those previous ones also could pertain to business, but on a business level, we know the implications are so much greater. So we got malware and ransomware again for businesses. People love to steal proprietary business information. People love it. I mean, it's a lot of money just waiting to be used, so you can understand why it's so targeted. And then you got people that want to do nothing but disrupt their competitors or put them under some kind of way, stop them from working for a couple weeks so they can get ahead. And then we got the classic business email compromise attack vector, where they get in your email and then they watch the emails you send and they wait till a day where they can put their payment information, where you're going to get paid for a job, and try and get paid up. Or they could use that to get an insider level view of your business to figure out what you're going to do next. Or they can just steal your intellectual property if it's being transmitted through there somehow. And we got the classic data breaches, where they're going to steal personal information like people's phone numbers, their names, who's a user here, whatever information you might have that's relevant to them. Usually they get it all. Or they can steal, once again, your business intelligence. Very high value commodity. Then we got supply chain disruptions, where they're specifically targeting a business or a organization that does something important. So we'll think back to Stuxnet. It's a nuclear program, or the Colonial Pipeline. Brings a lot of oil and gas to people. Ukrainian power grid, you know, we're about to invade. We send them all offline. Maybe we can get them focused or distracted from what's going on. The impact varies significantly for whatever the purpose is. Then we got the classic insider threat, which an insider is motivated by malice, or I feel like they haven't gotten enough or whatnot, and then they work against the company from the inside out. They can either, you know, put a virus on a system or tell people how to get in or how it's organized or whatever might be relevant. And one of our final concepts we'll cover is the recent evolution of AI. Now, we all know AI can be used to generate all sorts of content. You know, fill out a database for me real quick, or make a misinformation video about how they're going to come for everybody's guns or whatever it might be. But you can imagine, we know how efficient it is. It takes a second to write an essay, so it could probably come up with 1,000 different topics for misinformation. You know, 1 or 2 minutes, you got at least 2 or 3 that's going to stick. It's going to get in the media and people are going to talk about, or it's going to go all over Facebook, get shared 1,000 times. Or, you know, the AI could be used for deepfakes, which is where the fun really comes in. Create message of reputable or famous people for various reasons. I don't know if any of you saw it, but when the Ukraine conflict just escalated to where it is, there was a deepfake of the Ukrainian president surrendering, telling everybody to put down their guns and we give up, which is completely fake. It was totally a deep fake, but it was kind of believable. I mean, especially in the circumstances that you're a citizen, you might believe it. And then on the other hand, I mean, I don't really have much evidence to support this. I'm sure somebody's working on it. I'm sure it could be used to detect misinformation or deepfakes throughout some kind of method. And now here's the real fun of the whole presentation. There was an event where somebody made a deepfake of Joe Rogan on his podcast, and they were trying to sell libido supplements through TikTok ads. And we'll go ahead and watch a crazy example of today's deepfake technology and how it can be used. All right, here we go.
Category of supplements that are...
Are you guys able to hear this?
F, is this legal?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, this is hilarious.
He says, my first time seeing a deepfake ad in the wild on TikTok. How the F is this legal? Now, I've not confirmed this is an actual ad. This may be a gag. It's got 5 million views. Let me play for you this clip. Listen to this.
There's a category of supplements that are very interesting, work very well to increase testosterone by about 100 to 200 points.
Well, look, that Alpha Grind product that's all over TikTok, if you go to Amazon and you type in libido booster for men, you're going to find it right at the top. I mean, and that's because guys are figuring out that it literally is increasing size and making a difference down there.
It stimulates the testes, if you got those, to make more testosterone or estrogen.
So I don't know if that's...
I don't know if you ever watched that guy too much, but I would say it's pretty spot on to his movements and his voice and how he acts as a person. It's pretty scary, the point in time we're getting to. All right, let's wrap this up. So what can the average person do to protect themselves and their business? The number one thing, we've all heard it 1,000 times, we all know better, do not reuse the same password. And you can stay up to date whenever passwords do get leaked with the Have I Been Pwned organization, where you can go input your email and they'll tell you where your data has been leaked and what other information it could be with it, name, phone number, address, or whatever. Another thing, stay vigilant and watch your communications with others. We all know how it goes. You get hacked. Then they send a message out to all your friends, click on this link, or is this you in the picture? And then they'll get you and they'll get the rest of your friends in a worm-like virus information campaign. But another thing you can do is stay informed on new threats. There's always new ones coming out. We always hear about how there's some kind of exploit that just got found, or there's some new way people are scamming people. Cash App. Keep important files backed up on two different storage devices. I recommend keeping, you know, your important family pictures, your court documents, keep them on cloud storage and put them on two different devices. And then always be skeptical of information you're seeing on the internet. Always wonder what source it came from. Why? Who would be motivated to make this and lie about it, or what do they have to gain from reporting on this? I can wrap up a lot of obviously fake things just asking those questions. And then now we've come to the end of our presentation. Pretty crazy stuff we're getting into. World's coming to a scary point where everything's technology. Half of it's being targeted. You don't know if you're the threat. If you got friends that are engineers at Boeing or somebody successful, they own a business, if they're targeting them, they're going to try and get to them through you, through their family, through whatever means possible. There's some nations out there that want to do nothing, that will send someone to live somewhere 20-30 years just to get, you know, one document, just to do one thing, find out one person who we can infiltrate. The lengths are unknown, truly. I mean, we see every day new targets, new information being leaked, new things. Just totally crazy. I'm almost at a loss of words after doing some of this research. Who knows where we'll be in 10 years, especially with AI coming out. Golly, it's going to be nothing but fake stuff. Half the internet will be made up by AI. All the content will be probably tailored towards you, personal, fake, misinformation stories just for you and knowing what's going to click for you. It comes back to the previous presentations too. Your data profile being used to target against you. I mean, golly, who knows where this ends? Who knows? But thanks for taking the time to listen to me, y'all. Sorry for ranting on there for a bit.
It was a good presentation. Very informative. Thank you, Cade. But I do see, pleasure. Like, when you were explaining it, that a lot of it is coming from the Chinese. They seem to be the ones that are attacking China. It's always attacking.
I didn't want to promote that narrative, but, I mean, that's...
No, yeah, it's crazy.
It's fact. It's what's happening. I mean, there's no narrative besides protecting yourself and knowing what you need to protect. It's crazy. It's so absolutely insane. Our country, the U.S. is so behind in cyber warfare, or maybe we're ahead. I want to believe it, but you don't ever see anything being reported on our end. But you'll hear all day about Russian hackers, Chinese hackers, Iranian hackers, everybody but us. And our allies, too. Yeah, it's so crazy the way things are going. And the nation-state hacking groups. Who knows where we'll end up.
Does anybody have any questions for Cade? Okay.
Thanks, all.
The next person in line is Jameson Faber.
Yep. Hello.
Hi, you're up.
All right. Everybody can see.
Yep, we can see.
All right. Hello again. My name is Jameson Baber. I am a cybersecurity intern, and my presentation is on behavioral analytics in cybersecurity. So on the agenda here, I'm going to briefly discuss the cybersecurity landscape. What is behavioral analytics? Key benefits of behavioral analytics in cybersecurity, how it works, the types of BA in cybersecurity, and then some final takeaways. So the cybersecurity landscape. In today's digital age, cybersecurity is a critical concern for people, organizations, and governments in the fight against data loss, breaches, and theft. The fact is, organizations are increasingly reliant on the internet for their day-to-day operations, a reliance that was accelerated by the COVID pandemic's push towards remote work. As the digital landscape evolves, driven by rapid technological advancements like IoT, cloud computing, and AI, these innovations have created new and more sophisticated opportunities for both defenders and attackers alike. One such threat are advanced persistent threats, which are a sophisticated long-term cyber attack that presents significant challenges to traditional security techniques. Another significant concern is ransomware, which is progressively getting worse, and the consequences of an attack can be extremely damaging or even lethal to an organization. Ransomware is now set up to steal the data first, encrypt it, and then demand a ransom, and it can even be delivered with other malware to deliver a double blow to companies. Nevertheless, in the face of rising threat complexity, we can leverage the power of AI to strengthen our defense capabilities and mitigate attacks. And in particular, behavioral analytics has demonstrated effectiveness in identifying and mitigating a variety of threat types. So what is behavioral analytics? In essence, it is a subgenre of business analytics that investigates past business performance to generate insights for making future decisions. BA began in the early 2000s, but began gaining traction in the mid to late 2000s, and became even more refined with the integration of machine learning and AI technologies after 2010. It has application across various business functions, from product development and customer service to marketing and sales. It also has the capability to make predictions for gauging future industry success and analyzing past performance to make optimized decisions based on that information, which is kind of like how Netflix offers viewing suggestions based on its predictions of what you might want to watch next. However, in the context of cybersecurity, behavioral analytics plays a different role. It harnesses the power of AI and machine learning to analyze extensive data sets, which enables the detections of irregular patterns that deviate from typical behaviors, or usage that indicates potentially malicious activities that could stem from cyber threats. Simply put, it looks for things that seem strange or different from what usually happens, like having a digital detective that helps by spotting potential signs of trouble. By revealing unusual patterns, such as data exfiltration, privilege escalation, denial of service attacks, and insider threat behavior, it is a valuable security tool that helps organizations identify threats at an early stage, as well as assist in identifying and recommending improvements to enhance your security posture. The key benefits. The primary benefit of BA is helping organizations' security teams identify a wide range of threats. It can be leveraged in every part of the organization, including networks, computers, servers, routers, endpoints, and applications, to enable the detection of complex threats and even zero-day exploits. As advanced persistent threats pose a significant challenge to traditional security techniques due to their specialized methods of accessing systems and maintaining persistence, BA can be invaluable in detecting their presence. BA systems continuously monitor behaviors in real time, sending alerts as soon as unusual behavior is detected, which empowers security teams to respond immediately, addressing issues and preventing cyber threats from infiltrating or spreading further. Additionally, by detecting non-compliant user behaviors, such as unauthorized access attempts to private data, BA can help organizations demonstrate compliance with regulatory requirements. And given that threats like ransomware attacks can potentially lead organizations to bankruptcy, BA empowers security teams to proactively identify and prevent such attacks before they occur, thereby mitigating the risk of substantial financial loss. So how does it work? The initial stage of BA is gathering data related to the areas of concern and converting it into a format that can be used for analysis. This includes collecting data from places like network traffic logs, access logs, and databases recording user activity. Notably, this extraction and transformation of data can be fully automated and accomplished in real time. Data collection is key to making effective use of BA, and pairing it with big data analytics can be a great way to boost its capabilities. The more data it has, the better it can find patterns and anomalies that might otherwise go undetected. Additionally, organizations should aim to have experts in both cybersecurity and machine learning working together for an effective and fine-tuned solution. Once the data is transformed into a usable format, BA employs unsupervised machine learning algorithms to analyze the data and detect anomalies. When a detection is made, it promptly notifies security teams through an integrated alert system. And this information equips the team to take an appropriate action and initiate remediation measures if necessary. At the same time, BA systems will continuously learn and improve their detection capabilities over time. This adaptive process enables them to effectively respond to evolving and sophisticated cyber threats. Now, many companies assert the accuracy of their BA products. However, the interpretation of this claim can vary. If a solution alerts security teams about 10 anomalies in a day, and even one of them turned out to be a genuine threat, the solution could be deemed capable of accurately predicting threats. This is partly due to the general consensus that generating several false positives is much more preferable than allowing a false negative to go by undetected. However, it's also worth noting that in 2019, a study by researchers from Southern Methodist University using BA algorithms found the performance of different algorithms to vary for a specific attack type, with some demonstrating much higher accuracy than others. Additionally, in 2018, a paper published by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers highlighted a specific flaw with user and entity-based BA, indicating that machine learning has limitations dealing with and creating a baseline for privileged users, developers, and knowledgeable insiders. Consequently, BA solutions won't necessarily work as a one-size-fits-all solution to threat detection, though in conjunction with other defense capabilities and trained staff, it can make an effective tool for safeguarding an organization's assets. Ultimately, BA is continuously getting better and more sophisticated over time, with contributions from advancements in machine learning and AI, increased data availability, the shift towards real-time analysis, and integration with other security technologies. Some of the types of behavior analytics in cybersecurity. There are several categories based on where an organization wants to focus its attention and integrate BA monitoring. First, the most prevalent is user and entity BA, which focuses on analyzing the behavior of users, applications, and entities. It functions by scrutinizing various behaviors such as user login patterns, data they access or modify, the frequency of their interactions with network resources, it also tracks the behavior of entities such as devices, servers, or applications to identify unusual or unauthorized activities that may indicate a security threat. Additionally, user and entity BA can detect user account compromises, abnormal patterns in network traffic, privilege escalation attempts, insider threats, data exfiltration, and other anomalies like unusual login times. And then network BA focuses more on monitoring network traffic and analyzing communication patterns. It helps identify unusual traffic such as large file transfers, suspicious IP addresses, and malicious website activity. The most common malicious network traffic behaviors include the use of non-standard protocols like HTTP or FTP, large volumes of traffic going to or coming from a single domain or IP, a user attempting to scan the network, lateral movements across the network, downloading suspicious scripts or executable files, and large data transfers out of the network. Insider Threat BA, as the name suggests, focuses on monitoring for employees who are typically trusted, but reveal themselves as having hidden motives. These individuals may have intentions of stealing and/or leaking sensitive data, or even attempting to cripple the operations of an organization. In such cases, Insider Threat BA monitoring may reveal things like a user trying to install unusual software, or a change in the typing dynamics of a user, which may be indicative of stolen credentials or unauthorized use of another person's computers. Other categories include cloud BA, endpoint detection and response, application BA, and IoT BA. However, these categories often overlap and their functionalities can be integrated into a comprehensive security solution based on the specific requirements of an organization. Some final takeaways. BA enables the proactive identification of potential threats by analyzing patterns and behaviors, allowing organizations to stay ahead of cyber threats. The real-time monitoring provided by BA systems allows for swift responses to security incidents, minimizing the impact of cyber threats and reducing the potential for data breaches. BA systems continuously learn and adapt, providing a dynamic defense against evolving and sophisticated threats. By detecting non-compliant user behavior, BA helps organizations demonstrate compliance with regulatory requirements and maintain data integrity. And lastly, BA assists in identifying and preventing cyber threats like ransomware attacks, thus mitigating the risk of substantial financial loss that could lead to significant challenges for an organization. These are my references and any questions.
Very good job. Thank you so much. You did a great job there.
All right. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Does anybody have any questions for Jameson? If not, we did have one more presenter, but it looks like he never showed up. So we shall end this masterclass early since he hasn't showed up, and I just want to thank everybody for attending, and thank you all to the presenters that presented all their presentations. That's a lot of P's there. But I appreciate everybody coming in and showing your presentations. You all did a great job. And thank you for sharing all that information with us. You're welcome. Have a great night, everybody.
Great night. Good job, Margaret.
Thank you. I try.
Yeah. Well, it's not difficult.